If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is Eat, Sleep, Work, Repeat, a weekly series of podcasts about happiness and work culture. Hello, this is Bruce Daisley. I've had a mixed week. I've been on jury service, which is utterly harrowing and makes me want to tear down the penal system. Also gave the most 1 out of 10 speech ever at an Evening Standard thing on Wednesday night, a total car crash. I tried to land something that I thought would make people smile, ended up with a dry mouth and my teeth sticking to my gums. Happens to all of us, I'm sure. Legged it out of there, got the tube home. So, I was reading a research paper the other day. Someone asked me what I did on my journey somewhere, and I showed them the thing I'd been reading. They were pretty disgusted at the joyless life I lead. The paper was about how the demands of work have changed, specifically in the banking industry. So it was from an ex-banker. The whole of the banking industry has been based on this idea that people will enter and work 120 or 130 hours a week, sort of effectively working all but 7 or 6 hours a day. And over the last few years, something's changed. Goldman Sachs have had to ask people to take Saturdays off. Merrill Lynch, Bank of America, has asked people to not work some of the day on Saturday. Why? Because people have started collapsing. And not to make too light of it, but it's so extreme, one intern even died. So what's changed? Well, effectively, when you work all but 7 hours a day, it's intense, it's draining, it has a measurable physical impact on the people there that's quite stark in the paper. But the one thing that's changed in the last few years is when you add our phones to that, the burden, the weight is just too much. It's one thing to work all but 7 hours in a 24-hour period, but when your phone is buzzing with messages all night, the people involved just snap. Our phones have changed things. And by extrapolation, not just for bankers, for all of us. To respond to that then, myself and Sue Todd created the New Work Manifesto about 12 months ago. Sue's my co-creator on it, and it was an attempt to start the debate about the things we can change about work. You can find it on the podcast website, Eat, Sleep, Work, Repeat, or it's got its own website you can search for. It's had a remarkable response. Research companies have asked to validate it. Different professions like doctors, like the police, have been in touch asking if they can adapt it for their working. Lots of companies have told me that they've been trying it out with big teams, small teams, lots of different things. And so we're going to look at one of those today. So one person contacted me and offered to share the experience and learnings in his big company. It was in Lloyds Banking Group, and it was Tom Kagode. Tom invited me down. He said they'd been trying the New Work Manifesto in their team. He'd shared it in the company's Hive intranet, and he said, look, come down and see how we got on. Tom's a innovations program manager at Lloyds Banking Group, and he's helped really sort of share it and challenge those things, and he's simultaneously an absolutely legendary guy. You're going to hear discussions of various parts of the manifesto and the way that people at Lloyds are making it work. They're adapting it to their working life. So around the table, you're going to hear various voices. I won't call them out specifically, but they're Lloyds employees: Sam, Kate, Miranda, Veritza, Ben, Jess, Heather, Shirley, Alistair, Dave, and of course, Tom himself. The manifesto is 8 points. One of them is take back your lunch. And we talk about that to start. It becomes a discussion about the power of re-energising ourselves with breaks or exercise. We move on to discuss one of the other things, presume permission. Our ability to feel like we've got the autonomy and right to edit our working style. The first voice you're going to hear is Tom. He starts off by mentioning something that might be familiar, that we often think of ideas when we stop being focused on the challenge of what they're for.
So I guess probably the biggest change that I've made from sort of looking at the manifesto was around the take back your lunch, because I just think it's such an easy thing to do. And we're in a really great place in London, right? So, you know, like a 25-minute walk around the Barbican Centre. I love brutal architecture, so that's like fantastic to be around here. But it just really clears your mind. And I found that I'll go off, I'll have a wander around there, kind of let my mind just sort of free up from the stuff that I'm doing. And actually often come up with ideas to solutions that I might have been working on in the morning just by not being in that same environment. So that's been the biggest change. It doesn't always work for me every single day. I actually try and do it on my busier days when I've actually got more work on, because I think I need that time to step away and clear my mind. But other times I'll probably, you know, just stay in the building, but still try and step away from the desk. But that's been the biggest change for me, I think.
A couple of things, but what I'm going to describe actually didn't come from the manifesto because I'm quite new to it. So it's kind of accidental and experimental, but it does chime with what we're talking about. Exercising, so getting out and going for a run, I found in the past has been a really great way of solving a problem. And I think actually you might know that there's been some evidence from MIT and kind of Harvard where they were looking at the effect of low-level exercise on cognitive decisions. Yeah. The idea being we come from a hunter-gatherer background, so if you're doing low-level activities, you're thinking better. So going for a run, I find I'm no great athlete. I like to sleep as much as I can, but you just get into, it's almost like a meditative state, I guess, and I'm no expert on meditation, but it feels that way. And you don't focus on the problem, but you find often at the end of your run, you've got some possible solutions. So that they were just accidental things that I've done, but they're probably similar to what's in your manifesto.
And I guess that running is probably going to help in the fact that it will help you to sleep better then as well. So then you're going to be more rested when you do come back into the office, isn't it?
I'd echo that in terms of not running, but doing yoga and more Tai Chi. So I've always felt silly doing that kind of thing in work, even at, you know, at lunch, like even in a lunch hour, or even sort of sometimes after work. It's something I do in my leisure time. Definitely thinking about it more and more, but actually I can take 10 minutes just to breathe, to do an arm or whatever it is, just to kind of calm myself down and kind of move on with the day. The other thing was the take back your lunch. So it's, you know, like you get lunch or you can come back to your desk, which actually isn't, it's a common thing, but actually going away from your desk and going out or whatever makes a whole lot of difference. So that was the big thing for me. And the presume permission, because, you know, you're constantly, okay, I've got to, every single minute of the day, I've got to account for every single minute of the day. And actually, that doesn't really work. And if you know you've come in early, for example, and you might want to leave early, you feel guilty of leaving, even if saying leaving early, actually, you've made your time. And it's just push and pull. Sometimes you start early and finish late. Sometimes you start early and finish early. It's about the work, really. My friend's just moved to Stuttgart, and she said that there's no banter in the day at work. It's literally head down, all the banter is done at break time, that's it. But no one stays late. And she's having a real hard time with that kind of not being able to just get up from your desk and say hi and whatever. It's just not the done thing in her office. So she's battling with it. She likes the productivity because, you know, it's cool that she, you know, the Germans are kind of known for being, they don't do late, but it's really eating away from her, just that normal thing of, oh, how are you? And how's your mom? Or how's your, you know, so she's genuinely struggling with it. So so I think what you're doing is really important.
That's a really brilliant point about chat or banter, as it's described there. How important is chat and taking breaks to us? One of the things that Professor Sandy Pentland says is that up to 40% of the productivity at work starts with chat. And often it can be the silly chat at the coffee machine about last night's TV that leads into something more work-based. So not only can chat feel like it breaks the day up, but also the way it's the way we feel closer to colleagues and we collaborate more with them. It's often the thing we miss when we're working remotely.
I think if you've worked a number of days at home in a row, the thing that you miss is that interaction with your colleagues. And it's one of the reasons for you to want to come back into the office, also because it tends to be more productive for me. But it's also to see colleagues who also tend to be your friends and to have that bit of chat in between doing your pieces of work as well.
Something I was going to touch on, and I took it from one of your, I think it was the Hack in the Job podcast, and somebody in there talked about working in bursts. So my role, I'm completely home-based. There's no, I don't have an office that I go to, but what I do have is a network of branches and offices around me. So what I found sort of helps with my productivity is now working sort of set bursts. So I might do a little bit at home in the morning and then get that out of the way. Then I'll go into a branch and sort of surround myself with the people. And whilst they're not directly in my team, so my nearest colleague within my team is 150 miles away, I'm sort of taking in different bits from different people and different sort of different energies, if you like, and different things from different teams, and sort of get trying to implement that into what I do. So that's worked really well for me, actually. Yeah, working in bursts and sort of, yeah, that one's done. Right now, what? Let's go and change the environment, change the scenery, speak to different people, and then crack on with something else.
Here's one I didn't cover in a podcast, but there's lots of science for walking meetings. Fantastic for divergent, for creative thought, but not very good for convergent or analytical thought.
I was going to say, I guess one of the things I've found in the past, especially with my last team last year, trialled kind of walking one-to-ones. And I think it's something about a change in environment. So not just going out for lunch, but sometimes going out at other points in the day as well. And just, you might just go and sit somewhere. You might just wander around, where we literally would just wander around the block and would try to not use the same route every time. But definitely I just found something in that, in terms of the creativity stuff that you were talking about and soundboarding ideas. I think you just come back with something, you just build on each other's ideas. And I just found having a different environment, going out, maybe it's the physical exercise as well, just being out somewhere different, just found you probably just got different ideas and thoughts than if you just sat, you know, in the office at a desk or just huddled to one side of the office. Just feels a bit different. I think sometimes, you don't have to be out walking, sometimes, you know, it might be a breakfast or a lunch meeting or something as well, but it's just something about going out and spending a bit of time in a completely different environment just seems to bring more creativity, is what I find anyway.
It's not all success. Here's Tom confessing something that wasn't a hit.
I will share something I tried once that didn't work, which was I took four or five graduates across to the Science Museum. So the idea was, we're in a stimulating environment, we should get some good conversations going, and it fell completely. And I just think I can only, you know, trying to rationalise it, was I think they just didn't understand some of the basic science. So, you know, a colleague that went with me, someone to me did, and we were like, yeah, this is great, how do you think this machine works? And they just did not understand the basics. And so unfortunately it ruins the kind of experiment. But I think it's the right approach. So a change of environment can have a significant impact on how you feel and what you think and basically how you get on in life.
Well done, Tom. Better out than in. Here's a good one. I'm always going on about turning off your notifications. Half of the people who do it are still doing it 2 years later.
I wanted to talk about the notifications, which has been like my hallelujah moment of this year. So last year, I don't know where I got the idea from, but I turned the blue pop-up notification off on Outlook. But my security was still the little yellow envelope that you have. And I thought, at least I won't get a pop-up, but I'll still know if there's an email. Left it like that. I don't think it made any difference to my email behaviour. And emails, for me, probably like everyone, are like a physical weight on my shoulders. And then I had a 6-month sabbatical, came back in January this year, and I thought, right, work-life balance is a priority. New work manifesto came out within like 2 weeks of me being back, and I was like, brilliant, start as you mean to go on. And I thought about notifications again. I was like, oh, I'm going to turn the yellow envelope off. And I did. Oh, this feels quite amazing. And then I realised my BlackBerry still sat there flashing red. And I found myself keeping turning it over. So I thought, well, the red light's really aggressive, so I changed it to a blue light. I thought, that's nice and calming, but it's still flashing, kept turning it over. And so I changed it to a green light. And I thought, why don't I just turn the light off? So I've now turned all my notifications off my emails, turned my notifications off my BlackBerry apart from on a text. So I get a nice green light if there's a text. And on my email signature, I say, please call or text if it's urgent, so people know. So at least if I get a text. And that's what I say to the team. And it's made a huge difference in terms of deep work, as you said earlier, because I'll be lost in a document drafting something or writing a PowerPoint pack. And I suddenly realise, I have no idea, do I have an email? I'll check, I'll be 20 emails, but I didn't know, so I got the work done. So huge advocate of that. And lunch break I'd like to work on, but I'm not there yet. I feel more productive and slightly less stressed. There's still a huge volume of stuff to do, but I think in terms of getting good quality work done, because you feel you spread yourself so thinly when you're trying to do multiple things at a time, whereas now I feel I can do a really good quality job on something, whereas before, you know, I'd be distracted and go, oh, answer that email because it's from so-and-so, which isn't helpful. So yeah, probably happiness hopefully will come.
There's a point in the manifesto about having a digital Sabbath, having a break from internet and email, being able to switch off. Tom explains that he did. He may have discovered this when he was having an exotic holiday. I don't think he mentions it. And by the way, when he's using the description, Good is the email system that Lloyd's use to stay connected to BlackBerry emails on their phone.
I'd kind of moved away from using BlackBerry. I was on holiday in Kenya, and I was checking my Good emails, and I thought, what are you doing? You're like, you're in the middle of Africa and you're worrying about what's going on back in the office. So I, I did delete Good, and I deleted all the work apps off my mobile phone, my personal phone, and went back to using a BlackBerry again. Because what I knew I could do with that BlackBerry is literally switch it off, chuck it in a locker, and not touch it again, because the temptation can be too much. And you're always thinking, oh, if I can, then I will. So that was the solution I had to go down. And it, you know, I think it's that first step of actually pressing the delete button. And once you've done that, I don't think you'll look back.
It's interesting. I think there's a light at the end of the tunnel. So just a short history. I've been using BlackBerry for 20 years. I was actually one of the first people in the UK to have a BlackBerry and introduced them. I am actually. So some stories there. So I for previous companies, signed the first contract in the UK to introduce BlackBerry. And interestingly, initially, it was a fantastic help, and it reduced stress, because the idea was you could use short periods of downtime, like walking between a building to do something. Great. So wind forward 20 years. What happened about 4 or 5 years ago was actually I lost my BlackBerry on the train. And for a short period, I realized, well, actually, it's not so devastating. I don't need to keep, you know, checking emails. I then moved to Good. In fact, I introduced Good to Lloyds Banking Group. I don't use it anymore. There's a real benefit about Good. I find it's rubbish, particularly on Android, and it puts me off so much, it's helped me to stop using it. But the main point is, I think you learn, you get to a condition where you just think, I don't need to do it. I don't need to keep checking. And I don't. And I absolutely feel less stressful because of that. So the technology can help us. But what's important, I think, is how we approach it and what we get from it. And I can see that you're all at different stages of moving through this journey of stopping the notifications. Next, it will be stopping to look. And that's a really good place to get into. And don't do weekends.
I think I've got a little bit of a different perspective, because I find having the access stresses me out less. So I will look at Good when I'm on holiday. And I find that it means I can just delete all the crap out of my inbox. So when I get back, I haven't got 500 emails. I've just got 100 emails left that I need to deal with, and I actually find that less stressful than not really knowing what's gone on. You know, I would say, probably not to everyone in the team, but to certain people, if you need to ask me something, then fine. I will respond when I'm able to do so on my terms. So that isn't something that.
Yeah. So I don't. I'm the same. I don't actually mind. Not working, but answering a text, because actually, I have to admit, the phone is an integral part of my life, whether it's work or whether it's pleasure. So I don't have the Good or whatever. I don't do that anymore, because I have enough of my own personal life sort of going on, sort of thing, in terms of my phone and my other things. But yeah, I was just thinking about, is there a question to ask about people looking busy, but not necessarily really busy, or the phone? The fact that the phone's ringing, or the fact that there's a message, that you feel like you're doing something, but actually, really, are you really being productive? Like you're saying, once you lose it, you actually don't miss it. You're like, okay, well, you know, I could do without it. So I'm just saying, we've kind of created this thing about having to be on your phone, having to answer the BlackBerry, having to whatever, when actually we didn't exist beforehand, and we were still working. So
hang on. This is one of the biggest things in modern work: performative busyness, looking busy. There's always been something performative about work, and I always say to people who doubt that, I say, did your mum have a phone voice? Because, you know, there was a reason why we used to present ourselves as a slightly more refined, posher version of ourselves, and it occasionally permeated the home phone. There's one of the challenges, though. People feel they don't look like they're present if they don't answer emails quickly. And there's research that actually extends that says we judge our bosses by the speed that they reply to our own emails. So is that the experience of the Lloyds team?
Something I've done, which, again, slightly different working environment, and whilst I haven't removed notifications from BlackBerry, Good, and emails and all that, I've sort of tried to start using automatic replies and out of offices to manage expectations. And it sort of releases that burden of having to reply to an email. So a lot of the time now, days like today, I'll put an out of office on, you know, I'll come back to you by Thursday. If it's urgent, give me a call. And it's surprising how little calls you actually get. You may get the odd one, and then that sort of pressure of having to go back to all of the emails is kind of dealt with one phone call. And dealing with the end customer again a lot of the time, something which might be urgent to them at the time, it's not actually urgent, and you can manage that expectation in a much better way, and it takes that pressure away of, I need to get back to them by 5 o'clock or 6:30 at night. You don't, because if it was urgent, they would have called you. Yeah. Or they'd send it again.
I think I really agree with what you said about presence. I think that's the big thing with email. If you're not replying, you're not present, especially when you work in an environment that's kind of 24/7 always on, you know, like production support or something. If you're not seen to be replying, then the question is, are you there? And that's obviously a cultural thing. I think, you know, I heard one of your podcasts, you talk about, you know, fear. And obviously you talked about it earlier as well. And I think it's a really big thing where if you're scared that you're not replying to an email, therefore you're not being seen as present, you're going to keep doing that. And then you start getting more anxious about it and it drives more negative behaviour. I think it's really important. So I have good, because I don't like carrying a BlackBerry. But if I go on holiday, you know, on that Friday I go off, I'll uninstall it, like you say, and I think that's really important. At the weekend, you know, I turn persistent mode off, so there's no icons or anything, so I don't think about it. I'm Outlook at work, you know, I've got all notifications off. But I find that then you do drive some bad habits where you think, well, I'm not getting any notifications, so I need to keep an eye on it. So you'll be in the middle of a presentation, and you think, I'll just check Outlook, and then you've got, you know, a couple of not particularly important emails, but then you want to reply to them. Yeah. And then that kind of, you know, can set off like an OCS, like office communicator chat. And then you've come to the end of the day, you look at your half finished presentation and you think, oh, if only I'd not replied to those emails. It's, yeah, it can be a bit of a nightmare. I think probably it's all around your personal values, isn't it? If your personal value is, if I see an email, I'll reply to it straight away, you expect your boss to have a similar value. But I think by not replying to emails, so I work with, you know, one of my bosses is super busy, never replies to emails, but it's good because it encourages you to get up and talk. Yeah. And I think that's the thing about, you know, email and sort of not looking at notifications. People need to talk more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just a couple of thoughts on that point about your boss. So my boss responds to emails like that. And she worries, I think, if you don't respond to an email like that. I wish I could credit the person who showed me this probably about 10 years ago in Lloyds. And all emails, if I need anyone to do anything, I'll say for action by blah, 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 if it's urgent, or just for action, or just for information, or for review, and try and specify in the subjects. And I think that can make a bit of a difference. And I think, you know, as a broader team, it would be good if more people did that. I just had a chat to somebody in our team about turning off notifications. She said, but what do you do if the email's urgent? I said, well, the thing is, you're just fueling this culture around emails being used as an immediate means of communication, which they should never be. And with the volume of email that exists these days, it just shouldn't be. People should pick up the phone or do an OCS. And I think that's the thing. The more you respond to emails that aren't marked as urgent. Somebody sent me one last Wednesday, just said, had some generic title, and at 4 o'clock, it was about 11 o'clock, and at 4 o'clock that afternoon I had a chaser and a phone call and a voice message saying, sorry, can you respond to my email? And I went, look, I hadn't seen the email, looked back at it and it said, oh, can you just come back to me by the end of the day, at the bottom of the email. And I thought, that's terrible behaviour. And so I actually fed back very constructively and said, please, you know, give me a bell if it's urgent, I just can't respond that quickly. And I think, you know, the more you respond quickly, the more people think it's okay to ask for immediate information via email, and it's just not a good way to do it.
Yeah, sorry about that email, by the way.
It wasn't you.
So this is fascinating, and I didn't realise that some people were almost afraid that they don't appear present if they're not answering email. So there's sort of two things I want to say. One is, to me, there's a very clear hierarchy of latency in the different communication channels we have. If it's urgent, it's a phone call, or you go and talk to someone. Next,
everyone agrees with that.
Well, not necessarily, because to your point, not one size doesn't fit all. So I was just explaining in my mind, there's this very clear hierarchy. Phone is urgent, or face-to-face is urgent. Then it's your communicator, OCS, instant message. Then it's email, you know, because you expect, it's like writing a letter, right? You don't expect an immediate reply because things got to get there. So that can help us, but clearly not everyone has a similar picture. And I've probably forgotten what the other point was. Don't be afraid to not answer emails. So I used to come back in my previous role from, say, 2 weeks holiday, and would have 500 emails. And on several occasions, my tactics were, I'm not going to answer them all. I'm going to wait and see what happens. Not once did
You're
I have...
one of those deleters.
I would delete. Okay. And not once did anyone come back saying, you haven't answered something. So that shows that people are sending unnecessary emails.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got to get the balance right about not being afraid that you're not being present. It's not a mechanism to measure presence by.
I was just going to talk about a slightly different topic. So I was going to talk about fun. And, so I thought we'll try to finish on something really... So fun, I think, so important. And in our team and the building of a team, so in the Innovation Labs, we've actually carved out every 2 weeks some time for some team fun. And it sounds really forced, but actually we call it Team Fun Times. We've got a dedicated Minister of Fun who looks at like the kind of fun things that we can do as a group. So on a Friday morning, 11 every other week, you know, it might be that one week we're playing Cards Against Humanity. It could be
11 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. So it's quite an interesting one. There's another one called Exploding Kittens. Other times, you know, we've had rides on Segways around the office. That's been quite interesting. But I think, yeah, just having that time to get together, to bond as a team and do something completely unwork related is really important in terms of that building, getting to know each other, building relationships. And another thing which we've done, we all took off some holiday, a couple of days either side of a weekend, and we went on a skiing trip together. So that's like not many teams would do something like that. I wasn't the best at skiing, if I'm completely honest. But it was still really great to get away with everybody. And, you know, completely unrelated to work. But as a group, and there was like sort of 30 of us that went away. And you really get to know people and you start to build that relationship that isn't purely focused on work. You're working with your friends. Your team are your friends. And actually, it just makes it so that, you know, you're much more connected and much more bonded team and work a lot better together and understand each other better. So I think it's really important and can be so easily overlooked as well.
Is holidaying together or doing fun things together the space that the pub used to fill?
So we also run a sort of a pulse engagement survey just every week, just a couple of questions, how are you feeling? And last year, after the trip, which, so this is the second time it's happened, was this year, it grew in size. But last year, after that trip, engagement within the team and how happy you felt in the team and how happy you felt to work within the team went through the roof after that holiday together. So it definitely shows, like, the data is showing that it's having an impact. More holidays together.
I think we've still very much got that culture where in the office there shouldn't be any fun, and if you're seen to be laughing, it's kind of everyone's looking at you like, what's going on over there? But I think what was really interesting at Christmas, there was a team that put some decorations up, and you could just, so I sat by them, and you could just feel the whole culture and the vibe of things changing for that, you know, 3 or 4 weeks when they had that up, and people actually were having fun. And because there was sort of, you know, a reason behind it, it was kind of allowed. But we very much are pub-based fun. So no fun in the office, but outside, everyone, well, not everyone, but definitely the numbers are growing in the pub-based fun area. And there's a lot of networking. And I think some people feel that they have to come, and this is the problem that you have to address, you know. People feel they have to be there to join in the groups and things.
But how does the pub work with people who have families?
I think it's a difficult thing, and I am wholeheartedly in favour of pub-based fun. But it was a challenging thing, particularly I was a single parent for years and years, and it was me and only me that was going to go and have to get there at the, you know, allocated time that you get charged £1 a minute if you're late for, in terms of pickup. And I felt a really abrupt severing from a lot of the communities that I was a part of at the time, just because I couldn't go out. So it was like you were there for the next morning, where you got that you were aware of the afterglow of a great night out and of people feeling bonded and all the rest of it. But it is quite excluding when you can't be a part of it. And we had a social committee where we sort of, social committee, it sounds so deathly, doesn't it? But it was, I thought, a really good idea, because actually what we did was work out, well, what are the kinds of patterns that we could think about that vary, so that, you know, I mean, and like you guys do lots of different, like you were describing, lots of different activities, some in the office, some, and we thought about breakfasts and lunches, and but different kinds of ways of baking it in to different patterns, so that it's not always after work, because I think it's a tricky one. And I think by doing something almost democratically, so you kind of get a representative base of people. I wouldn't have thought of that stuff before I was a single parent. It just would not have crossed my mind.
We've almost bought the pub into the office in Chiswell Street here in London, and one of our other sites in Edinburgh. And we had something called month end drinks, and looking whether to include it or not. So downstairs in the area we've just been in, once a month there are free drinks for the whole team, and you would see a lot of people down there. Some socialising, some networking, very relaxed, very fun. But it's after work, so it doesn't answer your point. But one other thing I was going to say is, when I came across this building for my interview, I'd spent 10 years in the more corporate part of the bank, came into what was digital, and there was a huge inflatable fake surfboard downstairs in the canteen with fake palm trees, and it was the celebration of reaching some big kind of business milestone. And I was just like, what on earth is this? And this building in particular is one of the digital hubs, as it was before transformation came together, has been really brilliant at doing that. We've had sports days. There's all sorts of random stuff happening downstairs. So fun is a huge part of work here. The team I work in, our director, is a huge advocate of fun and very, very fun in herself. And so our team does have a lot of banter in the office and a lot of laughter, and I think it would just not work at all if we didn't. So definitely really important for us, and I think some parts of the business do it better than others.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to say about the bit, I'm all for the pub fun as well, but there's definitely you made me think of something when you were talking, actually, in terms of almost when you go to the pub, it's always probably with your immediate team nearly every time you probably go there. So it's actually, there are things that I've seen in other teams, but they're sort of a bit more rare to see, but where you have, we had like a decorate your desk competition for Christmas, for example, and one of the teams literally turned their whole bank of desks into this giant gingerbread house. It was amazing, the most amazing structure I've ever seen. Things were hanging off. It was a full structure hanging up. It looked like a house, you could enter it. It had windows. It was amazing. But it just then encouraged people to move around, and you'd sort of go and talk to teams who you don't normally interact with. So I guess there's the bit around, how do you get some of that social element, but more across the, you know, I'm very aware that I think the teams that I've been in, and the team I'm just joined now and the team I was in last year, were very, very social. But even those very social teams, I probably, you know, still half the floor I probably never even spoke to. So I think it's probably a bit in there for me around, how do we get better at doing more of whether it's team fun times or that pub culture, how do you bring that in a bit more into the office, but so it spreads broader than just your team, that collaborating across, you know, barriers and all of that, sort of breaking down silos, etc.
I had a really nice moment last week with Tom. I was feeling a bit stressed, and I had to get something done. It got to about 7 o'clock, and I asked Tom if he'd give me a hand just chatting through it. And he said, would it help if I bought a bottle of wine? And I said, yes, it would. and we sat there, and there was Tom and I, and then there were just two other people from the team left in the office. So we said to them, would you like a glass of wine? So we all sat there working on a bit, having a glass of wine. And then we spotted a lone soul in the finance team. And we said, would you like a glass of wine? And she, like, I've never seen someone look happier. And it was just like a really nice moment. And then actually everyone that was left were like, should we just take this to the pub now? And ended up having quite a nice, random, unplanned night out that kind of... I mean, and I was really stressed, and actually it was just like it just felt like a really good little moment.
And I think to build on that, actually, by just spending that time relaxing a little bit, we got a load of stuff done in that session. We were something that you were quite stressed about, left the office feeling really positive, and we got a real plan in place from that just sort of half an hour of just that collaboration through fun and wine.
And actually, the person that I sent the email to, that I'd promised to get it to him by the end of the day, sent me a reply while I was in the pub, which I picked up, saying, this is amazing, thanks so much. And then it was just like, oh, the best moment.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare.
PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Here's the plan, guys. We're all going to go and work for Tom Cagodi at Lloyd's. What a legendary boss, Dan. We gave him the chance to wrap up how the manifesto is working and not working in their team. And by the way, just a sort of point of explanation, Skillshare is their name for a team learning session.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, we're on a journey, right, with culture, and we all know it's a really tough nut to crack, and it's not going to happen overnight. So I guess, you know, these small changes we can make, I think the best thing we can do is continue talking about it, continue to have these forums where we sort of look what's working, what isn't working, what can we introduce, and try and sort of work across group to try and make it the best place that, you know, really excites everyone to come into work, I guess, is what I would say.
Yeah, I was just going to add one other thing, which is, I think in you doing that, Tom, and you brought the conversation to a Skillshare, which was a kind of cross-selection of the team went to, I think in that conversation and talking about particularly that bit around bringing your whole self to work and what might that look like, was just an incredibly rare kind of conversation in terms of office chat that we had, where people around the table bought something really properly of themselves, and the quality of that conversation and what was shared in it, I think left a very powerful sense of what might a very empathetic team look like, and actually how might we understand each other and work differently together, which was incredible actually to be a part of. And I think, you know, the number of people who will say, refer back to that is quite a powerful thing. And yeah, we should pursue it.
Right. If you're interested in using the New Work Manifesto, it's all on the website. It's not copyright. Use it, abuse it, change it, remix it, edit it, do whatever you want to it. Hit me up on LinkedIn or share, you know, contact me or Sutard via Twitter. Tell me how you got on. This episode is the last in the series. I'll be back after the summer. I've got a stellar list of academics and people who've just done incredible writing and research on work, laughter, philosophy, workplace creativity. I've lined them up already. So they'll be back after the summer. If you want to hear those episodes, you're probably best subscribing via your podcast app. Appreciate you listening. Please do get in touch.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.